Hi, welcome to the Brown and Happy podcast. In our time together, I will share what it means to be brown and happy. For many of us, everything looks good on paper, but we're still not happy and living fulfilled lives. It's time to change this, and I can help. I'm your host, Dr. Payal Patel Gayal. Hello, lovely ladies. Welcome to the Brown and Happy podcast. I have another special guest for you today. Now, this person, Navjot Dhaliwal, is a coach also, and we met, well, actually really didn't meet. We were in the same place, and then we met later at the South Asian Mental Health Gala for Sahas that we both went to in Santa Monica. I told myself that there weren't any other coaches there because I didn't meet anybody. Now, mind you, there was a lot of people there, so I just didn't run into her. And then later, when I had posted and it got shared by the organization, she reached out to me because she also probably didn't meet any other coaches there. So this was kind of really fun for us to connect. So I'm going to let her introduce herself and tell us a little bit about, you know, how she came to be in this space, and then we'll take it from there. Welcome.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me on today, Payal. And yes, we definitely did not run into each other at the event itself, but I was so happy to see through social media that you were there and we connected, and now I'm here. So thank you so much for having me on. My name is Navjot Dhaliwal, like you mentioned. I am a life coach, and I know within the coaching kind of realms, there's so many different avenues, right? So I specifically help women overcome their subconscious limitations, limiting beliefs, and repressed emotions that are blocking them towards what they truly want in life, right? So that's something that I got into, I would say, over the past, you know, I've been coaching now officially for about 4 years, 3.5. But I have been kind of on this path for the last 12 years. After I graduated with my degree in psychology and social behavior with a minor in philosophy, I did not go the traditional therapy route. So that's kind of how I got into this work. I didn't really know about life coaching, I would say, at the time. But I did know that I didn't choose kind of to go for my master's in psychology because I had this other side of me that was just kept on itching at me. And that was really my spirituality and being able to understand kind of the energetic world. So I ended up throughout the past 12 years of my life kind of blending both of those faculties, those both amazing, you know, knowledge and wisdom that comes from psychology and spirituality, and kind of blending it together for my own healing. And around 3.5 years ago is when I decided, like, wow, this really, you know, worked through all of my trial and error, trying different techniques, coping mechanisms, learning a lot. I've just been reading so much, taking a lot of certifications and courses myself after I got my degree. And then my coaching business was birthed pretty much from there. So I was like, I have to help people. I just knew that I was always going to be helping people. I just didn't know what my magic was going to be in. And now, you know, knowing that it was always with this blend, you know, of the psychology and spirituality, it just meshed together perfectly. And it just kind of happened.
That's so awesome. I like that angle. So, you know, obviously, I talked to you guys about like my journey and how, you know, I went down the traditional route of, you know, being a doctor because that was one of the approved professions in our community. And, you know, being the first one to graduate from college and like first generation immigrant, firstborn female, all the good things. And then transitioning, you know, into integrative medicine, which is my love and passion in medicine, and coaching. So now I, you know, do two different things, but I also combine all the things I know how to do. So that's kind of how I came to it. And my journey was about like my struggles that hitting rock bottom when it came to like my marriage, my relationships, how I was not loving on me. I was not having like set boundaries or even just like acknowledging my self-worth. So what brought you to this space? What in your journey? And yeah, please share as much as you'd like, because maybe this will like hit with some of the audience, right? As to what, how things that they've been not keeping, looking at themselves.
Totally. Yes. And I love that you mentioned that because I think that there really is like a pain to purpose story, I think, with all people that end up doing something that they love, right? And really, I think my, the pain, I would say, that caused me to kind of have my dark night of the soul or whatever you want to call it, was actually my last year of college. So I was leaving a 5-year physically and emotionally abusive relationship. And it was with, I'm Punjabi, so I'm part of that community. And it was with a Punjabi man. And, we were very young at the time. I was about 21. But I will say that I resonate with you a lot on not really knowing my self-worth at the time. I would say on an unconscious level, I would always ignore those red flags because maybe I've seen, people do that. I mean, granted, my father didn't do that to my mother, but to some extent in our community, there was like this idea of ignoring red flags, right? And you kind of just like pick that up as a child, you're just like kind of watching behaviors and you're like, oh, okay, that must be normal or like whatever. And one thing that wasn't normal at all was me speaking my needs, me speaking my boundaries. I had never learned that before, at all. And even it took me after leaving that relationship, even a few years to really understand that in myself of like, where was my role in that? What behaviors was I accepting? What did that mean about me? And what I thought I was worthy of at the time, because it was my first relationship, but it was very heavy, very just a lot of intensity. And I know there's a lot of women out there that actually are either currently in abusive situations or they have been. And I would have never known that if I didn't have the courage to speak about my abuse that I had endured. Granted, it wasn't domestic technically because I wasn't living with him, but we were together for 5 years and it was going on for about 4 of those 5. So, once I started speaking up about it and getting that courage to speak up about it after I had kind of gone through so many different avenues of therapy, coaching, went to some Reiki healers as well, just to like let me feel, I used to not even be able to talk about it without crying. And now it's like it gets to be a part of my story and I get to share it. And so many more women have come up to me since I've had the courage of speaking up about what I had been through. I would say around like 6 years ago was when I first kind of shared about it out loud. And so many women came up to me and they're like, hey, I've also been shoved. I've also been pushed. I've also been yelled at. I've also been called names. And I was shocked in a sense where I always felt alone up until then, right? Because there's this thing in our community too, where don't talk about the bad things that are going on, right? Like just look perfect. So I think when I finally started speaking up, I was a little shocked, but then at the same time, once I got to like speak to other women and hear their stories, it was like, wow, we actually weren't shocked based on just all these things that we just didn't know about what was okay and what wasn't okay.
That's so good. I'm literally taking notes over here because I'm like, oh my God, so many good things came up and like I want to go into it. I totally understand what it's like when you open up and then everyone pours into you their personal stories. And that's what's been happening with me. It's like, I haven't told anyone this, but, and then dot, 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 right? Like, this is happening in my marriage. This is happening. This happened with my parent. This happened, with my in-laws. This happens at work, right? And so I find so much joy and gratitude for the ability to do this work, right? And I know that you have that same energy. And I totally get energy because as an integrative doctor, we like literally learn about reading energy, right? Like that as a doctor, like this is what we're doing, right? Which is not accepted by the community in general, but we're willing to be like these woo-woo different folks. And then now as a coach, like I use some of that. And when you said, I want to go into red flags. I feel like that's a good topic, especially for our community. And I'm going to tell you why I now, after the fact, why I didn't see red flags. And then you can tell me what your thoughts are. And I'm slightly older than you, so my stories might be related to a different generation, but I'm going to just say this. So growing up, I was born in LA and I lived two lives, right? There was a life I lived in my home with my Gujarati family. So If you guys don't know, Punjabi and Gujarati, we're neighbors, but we're also very strong communities, and we're like hold near and dear, right? So it's like a very interesting thing. But I lived a life that was inside my home was different. Like English shuts off, Gujarati starts, right? Like even like speaking, right? We always like just spoke in Gujarati, and that was a big part of like what my parents wanted us to do, right? Could they speak English? Yeah. I mean, fine, but they wanted us to speak to our grandparents and stuff, right? Then you step out and you go to school, you know, you go in the outside world, boom, American bile, right? And you're trying to fit in. And back in the day, there was things like NSYNC, Boyz II Men, like I'm just going to name these different groups that were like popular, right? Jennifer Lopez, like all the things, right? So like you kind of try to like assimilate into that community, right? But in the Indian side, we had the Bollywood side. And I want to emphasize this today because I grew up in the genre where, if some of you guys don't know what we're talking about, just stay with me. Like there'll probably be another example in your community where you can use this example, is all of this romance was like glorified, right? Like it was glorified in Hollywood too. I'm also a George Clooney fan, I'm just going to say, but like in Bollywood, it was totally glorified, right? And so I grew up at the time where there's this actor named Shah Rukh Khan, and I literally had a picture of him on my freaking wall in college. Okay. So this is like, I'm telling you, like back in the day, and he was like the main character in all these romance movies. And all of it was like, this guy is going to come along, and then you're going to fall in love, and it's going to be so beautiful, and then you're going to live happily ever after, right? It's like the whole BS story, right? And so not only did it put a lot of pressure on me to find that person, but also, you know, and I want to speak, I was like, this is not about dude bashing. So I want to say it also put a lot of pressure on men. And I talked to some of these guys who are like, we had to be those Raj and Rahuls for all the girls out there, right? So now we're set up in a very tense situation, right? Where we have all these expectations, right? And we are looking at this time when women were mostly in charge of like domestic things, right? So career was like maybe, and then you get married and whatever, right? But like my generation, and I grew up in the 80s when it was make sure you have a job, make sure you're making money, make sure you have your own career and separate, and also you still got to all do all the things we did. And so I think that that was the reason when I first started dating, and we always dated with purpose too. That's the other thing I want to talk about, like that was normalized. It was like, you're not just dating for the sake of dating. And I'm so happy when I see a lot of the young people now, all of you guys, like don't have that exact same pressure that was there from the generation above. And I can see a lot of my clients who come to me, they resonate with this, what I'm saying, you know, because they were the firstborns. They were like born in the 80s or like the early 90s or whatever, the 70s. And we didn't have, like, other than the coupled options, like there wasn't that much opportunity. And so one of the reasons that I feel like I ignored a lot of red flags, and my red flags were taking on all the responsibility of keeping the home the way it's supposed to be, or technically the way it's supposed to be, or clean, or all the socializing. I put all that pressure on me, right? Mm-hmm. So did someone say, yes, it is your job? No, right? But my brain did, right? And so like that was a red flag. Like, why was it normalized that it's my job to take care of the kids once they're born? Why is it my job and to make sure I'm working and to make sure there's judgment if my kid's not having like desi food, or, you know, on me? I did it for me too. So, and then when your partner doesn't contribute, like it's kind of like, oh, it's your job and I'm going to work on my career. And now when I see a lot of couples who are like with the, you know, brown South Asian, I'm like, I see a different dynamic, and I'm so happy that that's happening. And also those of you who didn't have that and were in situations like mine, where I literally would freak out if my kid was crying, because it would make, you know, it caused tension and a fight, or like, oh, he woke up, like he messed up my sleep kind of thing. I have he's in my home, and I normalized, I ran to him. I was scared. I didn't realize it was trauma. So I would get triggered every time that would happen. And guys, looking back on it, I'm like, that was so wrong. But in that moment, it was normal that it's my job to take care of my kid. It's my job to come back from a full day of clinic and be in charge of like the kitchen stuff. I'm like, that's BS. So red flags, like, tell me what are the red flags, and like, whatever comes up for you about red flags that you notice that we ignore and why we ignore them.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I just resonated with a lot of the things that you had said. Before I get into that, there was something about the Bollywood movies, right? And it's just like, it perpetuates into our community this idea that we're really like on this narrative that's so inauthentic to the actual human experience. Right. And that's a lot of what I picked up. And that's like what, you know, I was resonating with that so much because there was a lot of that. And then I feel like that does cause us to, because we're so programmed at such a young age, everything's programming us, like family, culture, community, movies, like you mentioned. Right. And so, you know, we watch that. And then when we grow older and start dating, exactly, that pressure, you know, it was like my first boyfriend, he was physically abusive, right? And my brain was saying, oh, but it's your first boyfriend, you lost your virginity to him, like, you're just supposed to work it out until the rest of your life, you're just supposed to do this. We were just dating, we were kids, you know, we were teenagers, you know, like, it's normal to just like be curious and date and like, you know, all that. But that was never a narrative in my mind. It was one and done, right? It wasn't see who's a good fit for you, like, does this work out? No. So I think the red flags for me, especially back then, you know, I've grown so much since then, but back then I do remember her. I remember my younger self just being like, nope, just keep pushing through, you know, even if it's abusive, even if it's unaligned, even if it's, you know, affecting your mental health to the extreme level, like you mentioned, triggers. Totally. Like, my self-worth was completely dependent on his emotions and his emotional state as well. And then this was that, you know, doesn't even just start at him. It was a mirror of my family, you know, growing up. It was like, if there was someone in my family that had an emotional state that was other than just like happy and content. And mind you, we weren't even allowed to be like extremely happy, because that was also like, like, don't talk too much, like, don't express your excitement too much either. It was always like, just be very like neutral. And let alone like when there was any negative emotions in the house, same thing, you know, just very like, what can I do to stop this? Right. And I feel like that came up in my relationship. So I never had any emotional intelligence going into relationships growing up. So that was a huge red flag, is like thinking that if my partner is upset, angry, sad, jealous, anything, that it was something I needed to resolve in the moment. Right. And actually, now that, you know, I am a practitioner and I do energy work and I work a lot with the unconscious mind and emotions, it's like, oh no, people actually need to sit with their emotions. Like, it's okay. That's not your responsibility. So that was a huge red flag on my own, where I was like, I was taking on the responsibility, and it just clearly obviously wasn't working for me. I mean, when you're trying to take somebody out of an emotional state right away, like, their emotions need to be felt by them, you know, whether it's a baby, whether it's an adult, you know. And I think that that responsibility I had on myself. And then you think about women in the house too, right? I mean, it's a beautiful ability that we have with our femininity to be naturally, you know, with our senses, you know, be naturally more emotionally, you know, inclined. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's really beautiful now as well to see relationships having a good balance, you know, within themselves of both energies, right? Masculine and feminine dynamics, and, you know, being able to be logical, but also be able to be emotionally intelligent. And I'm seeing that in men nowadays, and I'm seeing it in women as well. And so that's really beautiful. But I would say the biggest thing for me, like, huge red flags, was thinking that their emotional states, one, define me, and two, that it was my responsibility, and three, that anything that they said to me would define me. So I was constantly seeking the validation of my partner, which was, you know, honestly, growing up, we're always seeking the validation on some extreme level, being brown and South Asian, from our parents, right? So I didn't even notice that little mirror reflection there of my childhood in that relationship until later on. But that was a big red flag, because I feel like if I, had I have known that I defined my worth, if any time he was having an outburst or something, I would have probably handled that situation much better rather than feeling this need, right, to constantly get my worth and value from him and how he was thinking or feeling about me or, you know, life at that time. So yeah, lots of stuff that just came out there that I was surprised even as I was speaking.
So I think this is the best. By the way, you guys, there is no script. Like, I don't know if you guys probably can tell that I don't like have a script because I think that when we are here, because life is so scripted, this is our opportunity to just go rogue, right? And when we go rogue, the deepest, innermost thoughts and emotions come out. And so, there's no right way to do this. And that's a lot of like the coaching I give is like a lot of times we get stuck in the right way, the right relationship, the right career, right? And something that you said, and I wrote this out, I was so happy you said that, is about feelings, right? One of the messages that we were given and conditioned is that we are responsible for other people's feelings and emotions, right? So what I say in my space is like, it's a simple thing, like, you know, sweetie, you made mommy mad when you threw the toy at your brother, right? Like, I'm just going to like give like the most basic example, or you made mommy upset when you got a B on your report card, right? No, mommy's mad because mommy's thinking that you should X, Y, and Z, or you shouldn't X, Y, and Z. That's where mommy's emotions are coming from, not you, right? But even like, and this is something I learned like much later in life, right? Like after, you know, having the kids and all that stuff, that I'm like, oh my God, like, yes, we have been programmed. Even I said that before. I'm like, oh my God. And I'm like, no. Now I shifted, right? In that space. But that's because I've chosen and decided to become emotionally intelligent, right? That's the word you use. And I think it's so important. But I know people who are in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever unit, who are so emotionally immature, but super successful, right? In the traditional term, right? It's traditional definition, right? Like there's, you know, like your doctors, they're your politicians, they're the engineers, the work in finance, like, you know, they're the aunties that throw the really big parties, you know, yeah. Like, I'm just kind of like, let me add them in too, right?
Mercedes and BMW.
Yeah. The Tesla, now let's add that, you know, with like all the stuff, right? But they're emotionally immature, right? And so what I have really worked on is how can I continue to grow and grow my maturity in this space around a community and a group that, you know, or my surroundings that isn't bought into the idea, right? I think it's like, yes. One of the things that I've noticed, especially when I was having like, if I had like a therapist or a coach who was white and I love them and they've helped me so much, is that when they're like, oh, just have a boundary, stop talking to them, right? Like, that's not, you know, how our culture works, right? And there's many levels to it. And can you just cut people out of your life? Yes. And when that's your answer, you're going to lose people, right? Because there's so much fear. So like, I try to be like, yes, one option is if it's not someone you value or it's in your core inner circle, then yes, you can choose to take him out, right? You don't need auntie with the BMW and the whatever throwing the big parties in your life, but you probably want your mom in your life, right? Right. You probably want your partner in your life, maybe, right? So, you know, like just being able to be like, I can keep growing and doing the work and believing that I'm not responsible for other people's emotions. And also they can keep believing their story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love what you had just said. It totally is a yes. And, you mm-hmm. know, because one thing that I help my clients with a lot is, and this is something that once I integrated it around boundaries, and I totally agree, like all my South Asian clients that have been to like, let's just say like white therapists. Yes. They're like, yeah, just cut off your family, like altogether. And it's like, wait, that still doesn't feel good. Okay. So I like that you mentioned the yes. And because, you know, one thing I learned about boundaries and integrated over the past few years that I help my clients with now is, yes, set the space if you need the space. Okay. If your nervous system is not able to be regulated around this person, if you're very hyper triggered or in fear all the time, yes, take the space. And you have to clean up, whether that's like a friend that you don't really care if they're ever in your life again, or a parent that you do want them in your life eventually, right? Let's say you do need to take the space to understand the dynamics of the relationship and how it affects you. And that's not the answer. The answer isn't just cutting them off, right? So let's say it's a friend that triggered you, right? Or an ex or something, right? And you cut them off. Okay, that's good. You know, you did that. However, you have to clean up what was coming up for you and why that triggered you. Because if you don't, it's almost like invasion of the body snatchers. Another person will come into your life and the same thing will happen again. And then you're going to have to cut them off. And then another one, and then the same thing again. And it'll be your boss this time, right? And it's the same behaviors, right? That are probably triggering you enough to cut that person off or quit that job or whatever it may be. But true freedom is when you can sit there and really clean up what were the thoughts coming up. And usually when you crouch them down, back, bring them back to yourself, like, oh, that person was yelling and screaming when they were angry, right? And I'm not okay with that. Okay. So you cut them off. Okay, good. And how did that make you feel about yourself? Mm-hmm. It made me feel like I'm stupid. It made me feel like I'm unworthy, mm-hmm. right? Okay, how long have you thought that about yourself, right? And so then you get to really heal because now you're freeing yourself from the power that that person also had over your own. See, those are all I am statements, your own identity around yourself on an unconscious level. And so that is the most powerful part about boundaries, because then once you clean up that part, the most beautiful thing happens is you stop getting tested by those types of people. You either won't even attract those people in your life, or the second part, literally, like whoever it was, let's say it was a parent that was doing that to you, they automatically just stop because now you've cleaned up what it does to you. So you don't react anymore. You don't get triggered. Maybe you'll be more clear to handle the situation or express your feelings in a healthy way, right? And so it's just, boundary work is just so beautiful when we can take it. Because in the beginning, I used to think it was always just about the cutting people off. So I really love that that's where this conversation is going, because I'm sure anybody listening really, you know, could benefit from hearing that.
The other thing that I'd like to, bring in when we talk about this thing is like the power, right? Like, where does the power lie in the relationship, right? And so if you've had this experience, right? Like, let's say with your ex-boyfriend, right? Like, the common denominator is you, right? Like, why are you bringing in this kind of energy or these kind of people? So this is not about blaming the victim, blaming the people who got hurt. This is about taking the power back and saying, how did I get here? What about me? Do I have control over that I can shift that? What is it about me that's drawing in these kind of people, right? Like, that I think is so powerful. And I do think that this cannot be done alone. And I'm going to say this, and some of you guys may have a lot of opinions about this, but I'm okay with that. This cannot be done alone, right? Like, we are highly educated, successful women, but guess what? We got there because we were super hyper-focused, right? And we numbed part of our emotions to get to where we were, right? And so if you really want to get to the core of the issue, and really heal yourself from the root, right? Foundation, then it takes an outside perspective to help point out things that you're never going to see as your own story, right? Because you believe it to be true. Mm-hmm. Right. And a lot of my clients, everyone I work with, they're like so amazing and like super successful, master, graduate, whatever, you name it, like, you know, multiple, so they earn money, like that's not an issue, but they're not able to see like how they got there, why they got there, right? And until you don't see how and why you got somewhere, you're not going to grow out of it. That is like my biggest gift that I gave me by investing so much time, energy, and money into my own mental health, that like, to me, it's worth more than, let me tell you the things that we spend money on that's like ridiculous. A house, car, a freaking Bollywood wedding that's 5 days long, right? Like, let me just say the amount of money we spend on this stuff, like an extravagant trip. Yes, do all those things and this is the thing that's going to allow you to truly enjoy the other parts of your life.
Totally.
Right. It's just like when you said that, I was like, yes, but let's set the boundaries because you want to take your power back. And mm-hmm. I'm all about, so my coaching program is called the Brown Empowerment Mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we go through four different pillars in this work that we do, and it's individualized, right? But the main key word in that is empower.
Yes.
Right. Because I just feel as women, and especially as brown women, we haven't seen that in this way.
Yeah. We haven't. Absolutely. And I love that so much because I do very similar work with my clients and just like knowing that having those empowering conversations, like you said, having someone on the outside be able to see how mm-hmm. your brain is doing the problem, right? Yeah. And being able to really see those, I would say, like blind spots as well. Mm-hmm. It's so empowering. And I love what you said. It's like, you know, being the victim gets such a bad rap, right? It's either like, okay, you're the victim, boohoo, mm-hmm. pity party, or it's like, oh, you're still a victim. It's like, well, everything in this world serves purpose. Okay. So being the victim does serve purpose. But at a certain point, exactly, you realize that you're the common denominator, right? And it's so empowering, right? If we can do that and call ourselves out and have someone else like be able to see that in us in such a loving way, because it's all out of love, right? And I agree 100%, because when I was still in the victim mode from that relationship, it was like always he statements, like he did this to me. Mm-hmm. He did this to me. Oh, this is about my dad. This is about my lineage. This is, you know, it was always something outside of me. And then when I had a coach, I as well have invested a lot of time, money, and energy into different practitioners that I just felt like really just, you know, I will never regret any of that, you know, that I've spent there when it comes to that. But because I had somebody ask me that empowering question, how about you?
Mm-hmm.
What part of you said yes to all that? What part of you was dropping everything at a dime and going and driving 45 minutes to go see him, you know, after he just did this to you the night before, right? And she said that with so much love. I knew it was coming from love. And that is where my transformation happened. That is where my power came back to me, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's really beautiful now to be able to hold that space for my clients. And also even whenever I need it, like I hire somebody, you know, because I'm like, there's clearly a loop that I'm not able to break myself right now. And so I love being able to support, you know, my clients through a lot of that stuff as well. And, you know, being able to see that the victim is like, and I'm sure you agree, is we're not saying that in a negative connotation. You know, it's a beautiful place to be in when you can even say, hey, I'm a victim and I'm doing something about it. So I don't keep looping these behaviors, exactly attracting the same situations, mm-hmm. right? Like sometimes it can even be work related, right? So survival mode, like you said, a lot of the times, like we're just pushing towards success, even if it's not aligned. You'd be surprised. And I'm sure you're not, because you've been in this industry for so long, but there are kids that went to med school that I grew up with, you know, in the same community, the same Gurdwara and stuff, that are in my DMs. And they say, hey, I did not want to be a doctor. And here I am 80 hours a week in my residency, and I'm miserable and I'm depressed and I'm sad and I'm anxious and I'm having panic attacks. And, you know, it's just comes from that misalignment, you know, like what are your motivations towards doing what you're doing? And I don't think we get asked that question often. A lot of the times it's like, oh, my parents, making them proud. Again, putting an emotional thing like as if you can really make someone else feel something, right? And I think that starts from such a young age.
I'll tell you why they're in your DMs is because this is obviously like my specialty, yeah. is because the amount of investment that you have to make in your life and like time and energy and money to become a physician is ridiculous. It's more than any profession out there. And so the most burnt out, miserable people are physicians, because you would have spent 14 years going to school after, like, your friends are making money like in their 20s, right? And then they're like mid 30s. Now I'm going to make their first measly paycheck because that's starting, right? And you're working, you know, 60 hours a week. So of course they're miserable, right? Because this wasn't something like, they had an idea of what it was going to be like. And then everyone gets a reality check. And that's where all the burnout happens, because when you get the reality check and you're like, wait, this is it.
Totally.
And that's true for relationships too, right? Wait, this is it. right? Like, is this what I was like saving like my joys and happiness for? Like, when we get married, we'll have this life. And that's like, that's not all there is. Right.
And or for women, their freedom, right? They're like, once that, you know, they're like, I'll be free out of my parents' house.
Yes.
Right?
That was a big, that is a big thing. That's the whole thing about like giving the bride away and all this kind of stuff. It's like, no, like you're an independent woman. You're not giving yourself any away. Mind you guys, I'm saying all these things being, having gone through the whole process and then learning from my mistakes. So I always bring this up, but I love when I meet people who are like not there yet. Yeah. And I'm like, yes, you guys have the best chance, you know, and also people who are in my situation who did the good girl thing for the longest time and now kind of have invested 4 decades almost, you know, into this life. You guys, we can change too. Like, look at me. I mean, I'm sitting here. I'm just going to say I look pretty fabulous. I got my hair done today. So I'm pretty excited about it. But like,
he does.
I take care of me now, right? And taking care of me is not bad. It's actually the total opposite. It's good because when I love on me, I can love on the people that I care about, right? And I teach, so I have boys. I teach my boys that, you know, what is the value of a woman, right? Like, how do you take care of yourself? Even them, like, take care of you, right? Because I'm raising very different boys than the men that are in my generation, where they're like ultra sensitive. They'll like point me out and be like, mommy, that's not appropriate, or that's not right, because, well, I know I can marry anybody when I grow up if I ever want to. And I'm like, you're right. I'm like, yes, I'm all for it. Like, I want you to do whatever you want. And I say, and also do it on your dime, right? Like, that's something that I've also noticed, that like in our generation where there is like so much pampering of boys, where the point where they like, they haven't left the nest, right? Like, they're kind of just like really dependent. So that's like a whole different conversation, guys, because like, I can see so much of this, like turning back to like the parents for support when you're like, the girls are just flying.
Yeah.
Right? Because we weren't pampered, right? But like, so I come from a family where there's like 2 girls and a boy, and I can see the difference. And so I've been very vigilant as a mom, hypervigilant as a mom, to raise boys who are, you know, going to be a different energy for the women in their generation and for themselves, right? Like, this is not about just taking care of one gender. So, and I said, this is going forever. This is really, really fun.
I know.
Could you please, I just want to end with, but could you please, do you have any messages for women, you know, when it comes to like seeing the red flags, or once they see the red flags, like, what would you say to these women?
So one thing that I think will be very, since we were talking about empowering, right? So one thing that I think will be really empowering is when you are triggered, or you might be unhappy, right? Like, the red flags, like, you're going to know, even if your conscious mind is ignoring them, because maybe somewhere in you, like, it's just being told that that's okay. Pay attention to your body, because I think a lot of us think that our intuition is in our mind, but it's actually our body. So pay attention to your body, your hormones. How do you feel when you're around that person, that boss, that, you know, that workplace, that whatever is going on? Because your emotions are there to tell you when something's off, and your body, your soma, it doesn't lie. So it's like, you know, you could ignore it as much in your mind. And maybe you've trained your body to even ignore it, but there still will be subtle sensations that will let you know if something's off. And then explore that offness, you know, with a loving, kind, curious, gentle, you know, place, because now we're telling you to take the mirror back to yourself, right? And so doing that with love is going to really help those inner demons that you have, right? Those shadows, the, you know, the unworthiness, the fear, the anger, you know, maybe that's been repressed for so long. It's going to give those things the opportunity to come out if you're doing it with curiosity and love. Because when we're already ashamed, let's think about it, and we're putting more shame on top of that, or we don't feel worthy, and then we add a layer of shame on it. It's really just like a inner battle. And I've been there before, and it's not fun. So just really pay attention to what's going on within you when you are around circumstances or people, or let's just say, even when I say circumstances, maybe you are like going too fast in your life right now, and you need to slow down and make changes. You know, change is possible. And I think that we don't see the opportunities and possibilities of it when we're not paying attention to what's going on inside of us. So that is kind of what I want to leave at.
So good. Guys, we could have just talked about so many topics, and I love that we went into red flags, right? This was not planned. And also I think that this is gonna be so valuable for all of us who haven't even realized that there have been red flags, right? And there's hope. Once yes. you know that, there's hope. And that's what I wanted to leave you guys with. So thank you so much, Navjot, for being here. And I'm going to put all her info in the show notes. So please follow her. Being a brown woman in a coaching space is not easy. And we talk a lot about how when we came in, not a lot of people look like us. And to be a brown person in a coaching space and talk about your own journey is even harder, right? And we've been all putting ourselves out there. And so please, please, please support other brown women. If you are, if you're not, you know, just being a BIPOC woman is just so different. And we could use all the support. And so share the podcast with a friend. Please write a review. Please write back to us. We want to hear from you. What do you want to learn about, right? So I hope you guys have a lovely day. Thank you so much, Navjot. This is so fun. And please, 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 you guys, like, let's hear from you. Like, what are the red flags that you guys have experienced? You know, what are you struggled with and how would you like to come out of it? All right,
thank
bye guys.
You so much. Bye.
Hey, if you're finally ready to start being happy, I invite you to join my list. This is where you'll have access to all my workshops, coaching, and pearls. Just head to my website, www.payalghail.com. That's PayalGhail, and join my list. I can't wait to meet you.